Well, hi, folks. Fred Reno here, and welcome to the latest episode, number 37, of the Fine Wine Confidential podcast, where I continue to chronicle the story of the extraordinary growth of high-quality wine being produced here in Virginia today. This episode is the first of two in which I will profile Afton Mountain Vineyards, which was first known as Bacchanal Vineyards. It was one of the early farm wineries when the owner, David Medford, a chemist, planted it back in 1978. It would later be sold and operated by Tom and Schinkel Corpora, and when they decided to retire, they sold it to Elizabeth and Tony Smith, the current owners, back in 2009. I sat down with Elizabeth and Tony in my studio here in Charlottesville over a bottle of Meursault from one of my favorite producers, Thierry Matreau. They are both from Charlottesville, and I found their story to be very compelling. Let's jump right into the interview. Elizabeth, Tony, welcome to my podcast, and I appreciate you taking the time to sit for this interview.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Thanks
good morning.
For having us.
Well, as people know, follow this podcast, I always try to start at the beginning. So what's your story? What was the inspiration behind why you decided to get into wine growing and making wine here in Virginia? What was behind that?
We first considered planting grapevines in 2000 when we had a place over on the eastern shore of Virginia. We were drinking the Chardonnays of Church Creek and thought we might...
That was our house Chardonnay at the shore.
Yeah, thought we might do something along those lines, but we were just too busy at that time. That didn't happen, but that was our first thought of planting vines. But Charlottesville is our hometown. And so, even though we spent 20 years in Hampton Roads working and raising a family, we had a property here as a weekend getaway, and we had a property here as a potential retirement, knowing that we'd be back home eventually. And as the kids were in college, we spent more time here than in Hampton Roads, and we did a UVA full weekend wine program, and then we got into the PVCC viticulture and enology programs. And that was, the weekend warriors was... so much fun.
At that time in the fall, I was teaching here on Mondays and Tuesdays, and so we would come to our getaway place on Friday, and it became 4 days a week here, 3 days a week there, and we spent our Saturdays doing the PVCC classes. I mean, what better way to spend your time than a few hours in the classroom, then grab lunch, and then go actually spend time in a vineyard or in a winery, continue to learn from some of the great characters in the local
wineries. What were you teaching?
I teach a second year elective in real estate finance and development at the Garden School. I'm in my 15th year of doing that now. So.
Oh, wow. So you really do have direct ties here to the community and everything surrounding it.
We do. Yes, this is coming home for us.
What was it like? I'm curious. What was it like in before you bought the vineyard, let's say, but you're familiar with the whole wine growing. You mentioned one of the best, the vineyards at Chatham Creek and John Winter and those folks. What was it like in the early days in the Virginia wine industry as consumers, as you were? What was that like?
Well, that was 15 years ago, easily, that we were starting to spend some time drinking and learning about Virginia wine, and it had a ways to go at that time.
I'm going to say, I mean, just like any place where you get wine, there are great wineries and there are some that are not so, and so that was, I think, early Virginia wine, it was like, I've got dirt, I can plant grapes. But it wasn't the depth of knowledge on what makes a good site and what vines would grow on that site. And so that evolution to a great site and the right grapes turned into great wine, and then other sites where they either had a bad site or had the wrong grape selection, the not as good.
And I think about 15 years ago was really when that almost tipping point of people understanding a lot of these factors, and it was a rapid improvement that we saw just even in those first couple of years that we were spending time.
Was wine something that was in your family when you were younger, or is it just something you gravitated to?
Only wine that came in a jug, so.
No, and maybe family holiday meals. It was not a daily occasion in our household growing up.
Well, that's not an unusual story that I've heard in my interviews in the past, right? So when you bought the property in 2009, it was smaller, and you've doubled acreage, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
So 26 acres now in total?
Well, the property in total is 160 plus, 165, but 24-25 acres in vines. Yes, we've ripped out, we've replanted, we've reoriented, but basically 24-25 acres in vines.
Well, your winemaker, Damien, started making wine in 2011. Did you make wine in 09 and in 10?
Absolutely.
This is the winemaker over here.
Oh, okay.
For 6 months.
So, I mean, there's a longer story, which I'm sure we'll talk about, but we ended up taking over on April 1st of 2009.
Okay.
And leading up to that, we thought we had a winemaker. And sort of last minute, it didn't work out. And so as of April 1st, we were the owners, and I was the winemaker until Labor Day weekend. So the finishing of the 2008s that were still in barrel, so Chardonnay and all the reds were still in barrel, and then the whites and the early reds, at that time we made a varietal Pinot Noir, were all done by me under the tutelage and with Michael Schaps as a consultant, but also some friendly guidance from Matthew Pinot at King Family, because he first worked at Afton Mountain Vineyards in 2003.
Right.
So, you know, if we needed guidance on how do you do this or that, he knew.
Specific to our setup.
Specific to Afton, he knew that, where Michael had a much, much broader view. And then we also had the good fortune of Robbie Corpora, who was vineyard manager for his family, stuck around. I think he agreed to 2 years and he stuck around for 4 years. So
right.
We had the benefit of that in transition.
So how did Damien end up coming to work for you in 2011?
We had an interim winemaker that was a lovely young man from France as well, but he moved on. His wife was not interested in living in rural areas. So on he went.
But
he was lovely.
And he grew up in the Malbec region in France. And 09 was a spectacular red vintage. So still some of my favorite of our wines are from that 09 vintage with him. But he lasted two vintages before he got married and moved to D.C.
Okay.
Afton wasn't where she wanted to
right.
be.
But we knew Damien in those coming years as that circle of regional French winemakers that all hung out together.
Mm.
So we knew Damien, and we had been to visit him at that time he was at Old House in Culpeper. And we went to visit him and we had tasted some of his wines, and when it was time to find a new and hopefully more permanent, because the fellow who was with us for those first two vintages was here through a training
Ohio
program.
State
yeah.
Intern program.
And we were looking for a long term winemaker to stay with us. And we met with Damien and encouraged him to think about coming to work for us. Thankfully for us, he did. He was willing to not only be honestly closer to Charlottesville, where his social life was, versus being an hour away plus, but also the opportunity for him to have a vineyard site that could really grow the vinifera grapes that he wanted to work with,
which
he really didn't have that much opportunity previously.
I understand. And so, Elizabeth, you're the general manager?
That's my day job, yes.
Okay. What is that like, jumping into that role?
Oh, well, it depends. These days, between Damien and our retail manager,
It's a well-oiled machine,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. I step out of the way, and I'm basically on the computer most of the day, like most office people. But our formative years and all throughout, we've been very active and hands-on. This is not just sitting behind a computer, but we've done
for the first couple of years. If you wanted to see the Smiths, you came on Sunday, and it was the two of us and our son and maybe one other person in the tasting room, and we were hauled behind the tasting bar pouring away. That was for years.
Yes.
And then now Sunday's the day that we tend to go out, because it's not as busy as Saturday and we know our staff can handle it, and that's sort of our day off. So it's been a total about face from what it was to begin with.
So were you intent when you were looking for a vineyard site to get one with elevation? I mean, you were talking about the Eastern Shore, basically, which is flat, but produces some exceptional wine, especially the Chardonnay from Chatham Creek. So were you intent on looking for something with elevation, or did Afton Mountain happen at the right time?
in a roundabout way, we already had properties here, and our intent coming out of PVCC was that we would plant on either or both of those properties in a small manner and work our way into a five-year program of eventually opening a winery. But working with Chris Hill and Gabrielle,
we were good students, and our instructors...
Neither of those sites worked. Short answer. It's like, oh, we would be sorry if we were intent.
One was about a 450-foot elevation and good relative elevation, but it faced more west, and it was steep. And so we really could have gotten 2.5 planted acres, and we would have had to be successful, plant hybrid grapes on it. And that's not really what we wanted to do. But that's when Chris Hill goes, well, let me show you a good site.
This was 2008. So he calls his broker friend, and his broker says, you know, what are you doing? And the broker's like, nothing. And so they took us to Afton, which had been on the market previously, but was not at the time that we came and met with them. And we were like, well, we were really just looking to start a vineyard ourselves. But when we saw the property, not only for its specific terroir and the excellent aspects that make it a good vineyard site, but it's just beautiful.
Well, folks, I'll interrupt her here because I've been there. Me, my wife and I enjoyed the grounds, and it is gorgeous. It's just flat-out gorgeous site up there. So congrats, and obviously having Chris Hill, you couldn't have had a better guidance from vineyard
Chris
standpoint.
And Gabrielle both.
Exactly.
It was just a wonderful experience with them. And in that process, we went from our five-year program to a five-month program.
Wow.
So it just turned on its head to buy an existing business and jump in.
And there was an interim step. We went to an unplanted site first and actually put in an offer there. And it really was going to be a five-year plant the grapes, let them get producing in that process, build the winery, create a brand. But that didn't work out. And this agent really sent me an email and said, I'm throwing this up against the wall to see if it'll stick. But if you're going to plant the grapes and build a winery and create a brand, would you be interested in one that already exists? And that's when we went up there and it was like, huh. So it went from your birthday to our daughter's birthday when it was under contract to April, it's closed. And wow. You know, me going and telling my partners, well, I'm going to be working remotely from Charlottesville starting April 1 and not telling them that April 1 I was going to be inside tanks cleaning them and doing other things that weren't part of the prior job.
So all the wine you produce is estate bottled, is that
yes.
correct?
Yes.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, that we have worked our way into that as we've expanded the vineyard. When we first bought the property in 2009, it was 11 acres of vineyard. But with the opportunity to buy more property contiguous and expand the vineyard, it's estate fruit.
Yeah. What varietals did you put in yourself as you were expanding?
Specifically, Albarino. And then more of Caprock.
So that was 2010. We had a north-facing... relatively steep slope, and so for the Albarino, that's, you know, give it afternoon shade, not as much sun, and it was 2010, so nothing like planting almost an acre on a hill, and it was
hand
a drought year, so hand watering all of these Albarino vines, and we didn't really get good fruit until at least the fourth leaf,
yeah,
almost the fifth leaf, but it's just amazing fruit.
Where did you get the inspiration for a Spanish grape or Portuguese
grape? This is crazy.
Yeah, we were doing the research, and because of that north-facing slope, less
right.
sun, we're like, okay, the whole climatic comparison of the Albarino native land. But interestingly, the corporas had actually thought of that themselves.
So
working with Robbie, we were like, we both agree.
We're
this is a great
talking
grape.
To Tom and Shinko about what were your thoughts on the hill, and they said Albarino. And we're like, well, that's what we were thinking. And it's planted in up-down rows. I think Robbie and Tom and Shinko had been talking to Jim Lall about a crawler tractor and all that, which we didn't end up needing. You have to be careful. The sprayer can't be too loaded if you're spraying to go up and down that hill. You need to go do something else first or only fill it halfway. But it's a great little site, and we ended up planting another round of Albarino in a different area a couple years later.
Just expanding Petit Verdot, well, Tanat, Merlot.
And that's important.
Albarino, those are all new since you just...
We learned very quickly that Merlot is a really great grape in Virginia. It's way underappreciated.
Well, again, I'll interrupt because my wife and I had a bottle of 2017 Afton Mountain Merlot last night for dinner.
Oh, nice.
And it is terrific.
It is just really hitting its sweet spot. We only have... It just went on our tasting list this past week, I mean, as a matter of fact, but it's really coming.
Well, what you said, Tony, resonates because I said to my wife about halfway through a bottle, I said, this is absolutely purely classical, high-quality Virginia Merlot.
And the thing, it's the Merlot has a shorter growing season. It tends to get nice and ripe before the tropical storms and late fall weather come in. So year in and year out, Merlot is going to consistently be good. And so as a base for a blend or even as a varietal wine, it's just really great. And there was no Merlot on the site when we bought it. So that was an important addition. We had old Cab Sauv vines from the late 70s and 80s. So ultimately replacing them with some more Cab Sauv PV.
Do you have any of the original vines that were planted still producing?
We do. We have about an acre and a half, this core old vine plot in the midst of our existing vineyard that has Cab Sauv, Pinot Noir, and Gewurztraminer.
Really?
Yeah.
So you have over 40-year-old vines.
They're
works of art. Yes.
Yes. Do they still produce? I feel like every year that we get closer to pulling them out, they feel threatened and do a little better. So they do still produce, and we do still use it. You know, we set aside those particular grapes in the winemaking process and track them to make sure how we want to use them and so forth. But the vines themselves are just art.
Do you produce a single varietal Pinot Noir, or you just use it for your sparkling wine?
We have in some years. 2014 was the last year we did a varietal Pinot. It really is just so hard to get fully ripe for a varietal wine, but we use it still these days in our sparkling and our rosé.
Okay.
So we still have Pinot, and we still use it, but not as a varietal, and I don't foresee doing that.
Yeah. Afton's done a sparkling traditional method since 2003, and so we've kept that going with typically a blend of Chardonnay and the Pinot. But, you know, the varietal Pinot was good to very good in the right vintage. But, you know, I hate to get known for
a
varietal wine and then choose not to make it in some vintages or just put it out there when it's not as good as it should be.
Well, that's tough, yeah.
And it adds a lot of body to the rosé, and it's just lovely in the sparkling.
Well, talk to me about your efforts in the vineyard where I read about eco-friendly, trying to really eliminate or at least reduce the use of pesticides and sprays and fungus.
For sure.
Talk about that a little bit, because that's a very hot topic, but an important one long term.
Right. And we have to give a lot of credit to Damien. We are simpatico. We have always, Tony and I, said that we consider ourselves the stewards of this beautiful property, and we've treated it very carefully in our own ways, but under Damien's philosophy, we've really expanded that. And he uses herbal teas and decoctions.
Really?
Yes. And also, he knows he's vineyard and winemaker. This is not just two separate roles. He is absolutely familiar with each block. And in being super conservative, we're not following given spray schedules. On any year, we are probably doing 50% less spraying than those who are following a standard spray schedule. So it's knowing what's going on, even to the extent we were talking last year about the number of spider webs in the vineyard that you can see on a dewy morning, which is a beautiful thing because they're helping to capture some of the fruit flies and other things. So spider webs in the vineyard, because we don't use insecticide, actually show a healthy vineyard and help us maintain a healthy vineyard.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah, and again, we don't pull grapes. The first, second, third leaf, typically a little bit on the fourth leaf, versus asking the vines right off the bat, how quickly can you give us grapes? Because we want them to establish root systems, not start producing fruit. And the vine will last much longer if you don't tax it, so right out of the gate. and also not teaching the vine. Damien would be much better to expound on this than I, but teaching the vines not to be reliant on what we're going to give them. You're not spraying so that they are weak unto themselves and waiting for you to come help them, but they are growing naturally resistant. And we see it. We see the leaves in our vineyard in the fall last longer than other places. They're healthy. They're not going into decline as early as vines that are dependent on having fertilizer and spray and so forth given to them. They are stronger vines unto themselves.
Well, that jumps to my other topic. And I think some of the vintners I've asked this misinterpreted what I was saying, but what have you seen in your time as far as climate change? What has been the differentiation that you've seen? And I don't mean it's gotten warmer necessarily or anything like that, but what have you seen, if anything, in your vineyards?
Well, earlier bud break, for one, and later frosts. So you're just, you know, Mother's Day, of course, is the day by which we all start to breathe again. Well, most years.
Other than 2020.
But yeah, it's an issue. So being where we are, part of what makes it such a good vineyard site is we are in the rain shadow of the mountain. So we're protected from a lot of the spring and summer. We have great air flow. We are not as prone to frost as some places are.
At our elevation, because the elevation mitigates
a little bit, and you're right.
And we have three creeks on the, if you look at our property up from the Blue Ridge Parkway, you can see down on our property, and it's sort of an isthmus, if I can say that word right. There are creeks on either side of it, and we have a 13-acre lake as well that helps mitigate temperature once that, it starts.
Yeah, it's 30 feet deep. It's a high volume of water. And so if it's been warm and thank you.
Put that next to that microphone, we're going to pour a little bit more of this Meursault.
Yeah. So if it's already been warm, then the lake water has heated. And so that's, we planted the Tannat in the best place on the site for the Tannat, but it's also closest to the lake because the Tannat is more frost susceptible.
Right.
And, you know, if the water is 45 degrees and it goes down to 32, it may be 33 or 34 closer to the water. So you do get that little bit of extra protection for being there by the lake.
And not only the water, but the fact that we're at the confluence of two natural breaks in the Blue Ridge Mountains. So the Rockfish Gap and the
Humpback Gap. One in between.
So we have constant wind. Hmm. So Tony's talking about the mitigating factors of the lake and so forth, but we can't burn.
Yeah, burning hay bales, we'd catch Nelson County on fire.
but we count on that breeze to keep the air flowing. So we are less frost prone than others, but it is very windy in Afton. But circling back to your question about climate change, that rain shadow helps us through spring and summer. But then the fall storms that come from the south seem to be getting more frequent and stronger, and those affect all of us. I don't know that there's anybody who's immune to the tropical storms.
Yeah, the weather just seems to be more severe when it happens.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly.
As I said to my wife, it's the wind.
Right.
I mean, that's essentially what has driven the California fires. It's the intensity of the winds.
Right. Yeah, anecdotally, we were on a trip. Several Virginia wine people did a trip to Napa in 2014, and the main inn where we were all staying, we watched in 2017 go up in flames.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, that was just like, oh, my God, we all stayed there 3 years ago.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So even from this coast.
Well, so you've got an important wine writer, a somm, a trade person, whoever. You want to impress them, one wine of your wines. What wine would, and I know it's tough to ask what for what one wine, but what one would you pull out and say, taste this, this represents who Afton Mountain Vineyards is?
We might give different answers because there's personal preference.
Sure.
What would you do?
I mean, I would probably say Tradition, which is our Bordeaux-style blend. 16 was our first vintage of that blend, and 17 was a fabulous vintage. So that's probably what I would pull out that is best reflective of who we are now as Afton.
Mm-hmm.
For somebody that likes bigger reds, our 09 Cab Sauv is pretty fabulous. But, you know, I've personally got maybe 18 bottles of that left.
Yeah, that's pretty much...
Yeah, that's not something we're going to promote.
Exactly, yeah.
I do think the red blends are what the forte is, certainly for us, and the opportunity for others in the AVA to really shine is the red blend.
And then the Albarino.
That was going to be mine. I absolutely love our Albarino.
I can't wait to taste it.
We haven't had it. It sells out so quickly. That's one of the reasons.
Interesting.
We planted in 2010. I think our first vintage was 2015. And then we planted more, a second block, in 2016 that's just starting to produce. So we only have it for about 6 months a year. And we've bottled the 2021, but we won't release it till April or May, just to try to get through our busy season and have it in stock. But that is probably my favorite.
But it's got so much character to it.
Yeah, it's got that savory, mineral, light peach.
Wow.
It's really good.
That sounds fascinating. What's the biggest challenge you see at this stage of your career in your vineyard and your winery? What would you like to achieve next? Or have you just felt, okay, we're just going to steady the ship, this is us?
Well, we have ripped out and replanted very heavily since 2016. And in another 2 to 3 years, we'll see all that fruit really come.
So we sell out of our Cab Franc, varietal Cab Franc as well every year.
Same for Gewurztraminer.
And it's an older block. And so when we ripped out some of the old Cab Sauve and old Gewurztraminer that was not producing well, we replaced it with a block of Cab Franc and another block of Albarino. And so that's sort of our future, is when the Franc gets into production, when that Albarino gets into production, we've got younger Gewurz vines that were the replacement that's just barely getting into production. So when all that is going...
The Tannat has been slow to start because the first year we planted it, and then a couple years subsequent, it's cold sensitive.
Right.
And so it's really, what's probably fifth leaf this year, it's really just starting to produce.
Because those young vines, the fruit's so acidic. And Tannat's going to be that way anyway. But, you know, as it calms down, I think that's going to be
pretty spectacular. Well, what I'm hearing here is an evolution, and the wines are evolving, and there's some future, not just potential greatness, but really interesting wines.
Agreed, yeah.
Yes.
That is on your horizon. Is there a generational pass here? Is one of your sons or daughters? I mean, your son is got the craft beer business going,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Champion Beer.
Yes. He still helps occasionally with marketing for Afton. He has, you know, a lot of connections out there, and he helps us from time to time. Our daughter and son-in-law actually own the Monticello Wine Company brand, which we haven't talked about.
I was going to get to that.
So there's hope for either or both of them.
Or at least the possibility that they would have an interest in...
Well, let's talk about that, because that's something that very much intrigued me when we just talked on the phone. The Monticello Wine Company label that you own, I mean, this is historic. There's a lot of history here. This is a potentially, to me, I see it as a potential national brand with a lot of potential. Obviously, Virginia's challenge is enough vineyard. But why did you purchase and get the rights to this label, and what do you want to do with it?
That's a really great story and an interesting question. So a little bit of the backstory. Obviously, the Monticello Wine Company originated in 1872. It was a co-op in downtown Charlottesville. And at the time, their focus was on native grapes and grape brandy. And they had the capacity, it was a four-story building downtown, for 7,000 cases. And their extra Virginia claret won gold in the Vienna Internationals. Anyway, it was the largest winery in the South at the time. It was a really interesting story. So fast forward to 1913, between a fire and prohibition, it ceased production.
Right.
And it was dormant for a while. And then Shep Rousey from Rockbridge picked it up for a little bit, and then it kind of fell dormant again. In 2014, a couple brothers, one of whom was a winemaker at another local winery, reinvigorated the brand. And we knew them, and I spoke with him, and I'm like, that is so awesome, because he and I are both Charlottesville natives. I was like, that's so great. I'm so pleased that you guys did this. A couple years later, he's left the industry. And so through our connections and their remembering that we thought that was such a great idea, we all came to the table and said, this is too great a story.
We've got to keep it in commerce. They were selling wine, but he was leaving the industry.
They weren't continuing to produce.
We want to keep this brand in commerce to honor that history.
Well, man, great on you all to do that.
Right, and we didn't know, honestly, what we were going to do with it. We were just like, yes, yes, we'll take it, and we'll figure this out. And what we have chosen to do to this point is it's a sister label to Afton, and it's what we sell distributed to local restaurants, local wine shops. It is, they are the same wines as Afton. It's just a way to keep that label in use and trade. But going forward, that's the opportunity for Damien and the younger generation, if they want to do something different from dry vinifera wines or just go in a different direction, that is the label that they can take and do more things with. So we'll see. It's a story waiting to be still written.
As a branding guy, I see an opportunity here that I'm like, wow, what an opportunity for y'all, for that brand, and for Virginia.
Right.
It's just a great combination, so it's really great that you decided to save it.
And it was also really fun working with our daughter and son-in-law on the label development and some of the branding.
Our son-in-law is in graphic design.
So it was just a good family fun time.
Right.
Oh, they helped us great.
At our launch party and so forth. So the brand is theirs, and they license it to Afton, but it's their way to feel connected to the family business. They both have other day jobs, but their way to feel connected. And they run the social media for the Monticello Wine Company and are very involved at that level, and it gives them good interactions with Damien and our team.
What varietals do you put under that label right now?
Currently, it's rosé, chardonnay,
and a red blend.
Our red blend, and at the current red blend is our Sangiovese based blend, the Bacco equivalent. And we have also done the Bordeaux style red blend. We don't currently have that under label, but those are the four: two red blends, rosé, and chardonnay.
So I'll ask this question of you first, Elizabeth, ladies first, and then Tony. It may end up being the question being answered the same way, but everybody's had it. What was that one wine that you had in your life where you went, oh, wine can be this interesting, this ethereal?
I'd probably answer that with two different...
Please.
If I could. One was an experience versus a wine. When I was a young professional in Virginia Beach and we were out at a company dinner, and I was probably 26, 27, and my boss ordered the wine and she had the server bring it to me to taste. And I don't know if she was trying to give me a leg up or put me on the spot. But either way, he brought it to me and I said, it's corked, and I sent it back. And that was kind of really like, okay, it really showed me, one of the things I love most about wine is that it's a living thing and it's constantly evolving. So that was an experience
right. That
really made me feel like, okay, I could know a little bit about this. But then as far as the wine goes, we were at, again, a corporate type event, a sponsored dinner, and we had a bottle of Quintessa.
Mm,
okay. One of their earliest vintages.
Because that was a while ago.
A while ago, yeah, that was a while ago.
Oh, yeah.
20 plus years ago, easily. But at this great dinner where we're all having a big time and lots of good conversation, I actually noticed, I'm like, this wine is really good. And so that was, you know, again, 20 plus years ago, one of the first wines that really made me stand up and pay attention.
But yeah, Quintessa was beautiful stuff.
And that was a special night and a great bottle of wine. And my disappointment that night is there was a non-wine appreciating person in the group who left some in her glass at the end of the night. And, you know, as much as I wanted to, I was not going to go down her glass. But it's like, oh, that beautiful wine is sitting there going to waste.
Oh, my God. Well, I also see in your tasting room that you do sell a little bit of Damien's family Beaujolais Village.
We do. We do. It's a great family project. We really do focus not only on the land, but on family. And we consider this our wine family. And this is Damien's uncle's vineyard in Beaujolais that he has helped them reinvigorate. Again, as their succession plans apparently were fading a little bit, Damien has stepped in with his cousin and uncle and brought this vineyard back to life. And so we said that, you know, absolutely, if we can help them get reestablished, and it's a beautiful Beaujolais. It's
Yes, we're on our third vintage now.
Yeah. Okay. And it's a great way.
It's actually gotten, and you know, vintage differences are there, but it's gotten better each vintage. It's really.
That's gonna be fun.
It is fun,
and it's a nice project to say, you know, this is our winemaker's family in France. If you want something different from what we have, or you know, in a different style or whatever, but nevertheless, with a story and with a family connection, here's Beaujolais.
I will tell you, switching subjects slightly, the experience my wife and I had, it would have been in the summer of last year, late summer, at the tasting room, was really nice. The people were very professional, but very warm. There was a definite sense of family and camaraderie within the team there. We really felt it.
And I'm glad you sense that. We feel so fortunate to have such a great staff. And even in recent times when maybe folks have had trouble hiring, our staff bring their friends in. And we have just continued to grow with really wonderful people that we
trust. They all have a connection with each other. Not they all do now because of where they work, but a new person comes in, that connection is, they're just an extension of the existing family, and it's really great.
Going to work is fun most days.
You're also in the hospitality business, which looks quite honestly thankless to me, but what got you involved in the hospitality business? I mean, you have cottages for rent, you have places for people to stay.
Right. Again, I think it's partially an appreciation of this property that we want to share. And keeping our methods of welcoming guests in a way that makes it feel like a special place, and that we're greeting them with people who care, and maintaining that sense of a special place. And yes, we have the lodging, we have the cottages and the guest house, and we have the goats, and seasonally we've had chickens, and it's so fun to drive into work in the morning and either see a couple up on the deck of the cottage with a cup of coffee, or a little kid down at the fence looking and feeding grass to the goats. It's just this sense of continuity of, this is a working farm that we want to share. This is not just a production vineyard and we're selling wine.
And for those people, you know, staff is showing up about 10 o'clock in the morning, is there till maybe 6, but from 6 p.m. till 10 a.m., you know, it's the farm to themselves kind of thing. And it's a really great experience. And we had a fun time in the design and decorating process. Yeah. And those are things we like to do.
Projects. We're always project people.
And that was part of what drew us to this business, is every vintage is different. And so it's a continuing project. And if you're not doing something new, you're falling behind also.
Right.
Which creates continuing projects for us.
Right. Well, I can see that, you know. So you have no French American hybrids planted in your vineyard at all?
No. I think with the aspect of our vineyard, it would not be the best use of our property. I certainly think hybrids have a role, and I don't think you have to be either or. But what we have, and as we mentioned, planting more of what we're already selling out of. We have a number of SKUs, several of which sell out, or varietals, however you want to look at it, which sell out in 6 months. So for us to be planting or focusing on anything more is trying to build what we have so that we have more constant ability.
So you must be about 5,000, maybe a little less, cases a year annually?
Less. Yes. That's the capacity of the winery, and we've bumped against that a couple times.
Yeah, two vintages, we've done 4,600 or so cases, but in terms of retail sales and sort of the average, we're between 3 and 4.
Well, there's also, for me, coming to Virginia, what I sense is a real collegiality, or collegiality amongst the vintners themselves. Everybody still seems to be willing to share and help each other.
Absolutely. You know, when I was working with Michael that first year, the first time I filtered wine, the existing filter wasn't up to Michael's standards. So I ended up heading over and borrowing a plate and frame filter from Jake, who was at Pollock at that time.
Right.
And I learned how to filter on somebody else's filter. And if we're ever short on anything, Veritas is right around the corner, and Emily and Damien can do that. And
those relationships are a huge part of what we enjoy so much about this business. As a matter of fact, when we were contemplating what we were going to do with the Monticello Wine Company, it's like, well, we called Jacob and said, come have a drink with us and let's just banter about what we could do with this. And that level of collegiality, as a matter of fact, I'm on my way after this interview to drop by King Family, and I have a bottle of wine for Mathieu that was produced by him when he first came, and his first year in 2003 was at Afton.
Wow. And it's the last, well, actually, we held back two bottles from each vintage of this sparkling, and one of those two is now going to Mathieu. So there's only one.
It was because he produced that wine.
Oh, he's going to cherish that.
Or I hope and enjoy it as well. But it is a great community, and I don't know that exists elsewhere. Obviously, we're not part of it, but
I remember in 2009, we did a single barrel varietal Merlot. So it was actually the hard press of the Merlot. You know, that's 25 cases, right. And we hand-numbered and signed every one of those bottles as part of that. But bottle number one went to Mathieu as a thank you for his help in getting things going.
Well, I can tell you from my 43 years experience in the wine industry, I don't see that anywhere but here. There's a little bit of it in Europe still, mm-hmm. but Virginia appears to be unique in that regard.
And I think everybody just wants to improve the quality of the wine. This is not us versus them. This is us together. We'll all do better for our AVA and for the state and for our industry if we're working together. I know you're familiar with the Winemakers Research Exchange. Right. Lots of folks have talked about that. But just that whole sense of if we're all improving, it works for all of us.
I couldn't agree more. Well, Elizabeth and Tony, this is delightful. Thank you for coming to my studio and sharing a glass of white Burgundy. We got some
thank you
Merceau.
So much.
Yes.
2019 Merceau from Thierry Matreau. It's rocking good. And thank you.
Thank you, Fred.
Thanks, Fred.
Well, folks, I hope you found that interview I had with Elizabeth and Tony Smith from Afton Mountain Vineyards as interesting as I did. Given the success they've enjoyed over at Afton Mountain, I can't wait to see what they might do with the Monticello Wine Company's historic label. I know there's so much potential for this brand in the future. In the next upcoming episode, number 38, I sat down with Damien Blanchon, the winemaker and vineyard manager at Afton Mountain Vineyards. Damien produces some of the finest, well-defined wines I've had the pleasure of tasting here in Virginia. These wines have what I often refer to as soul. There's a sense of place that you get when the wine hits your palate. Damien's unique approach to farming the vineyard is producing some very exciting results. You don't want to miss this episode. Stay tuned. As always, thanks for being a listener. If you have any questions or comments, please send them to me at FredFineWineConfidential.com. See you on the other side. Music at Fine Wine Confidential podcast by Jason Shaw at Audionautix.com from his copyrighted song Acoustic Shuffle under Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 international license. I hope you enjoyed the show.